Hi, I was sent to conversion therapy, and I'm Allison.
And I'm sexualizing the student body president election. I'm Evan.
And we are Cheryl's Bitches. Another iconic episode.
They really just keep giving them to us. We've been on a roll here.
What stuck out to me about this episode is that every character did the most extreme action they could do. Of all the options they were considering, they're like, I'm not gonna do that. I'm not gonna freak out. And then they just all did the extremely chaotic thing.
At every turn, everyone made the most chaotic decision possible, and it was so fun to watch.
And that's what brings the entertainment to us. So this is chapter 29, Primary Colors. Don't know what
that is. I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't understand the name of this one, but you know?
Yeah. We start with a Jughead voiceover, basically just connecting to last episode that Betty came back with the DNA test from Chick that she did without his consent. And the Jughead voiceover says that, Betty has realized she let a stranger into the house. Dun, dun, dun. So Betty and Chick fight, and she's like, you don't have any Blossom blood, so you can't be, you're not who you say you are. And then Chick is just confused and is like, dun. I'm not a Blossom. What are you talking about? And Betty is like, no, if you're a Cooper, then you're a Blossom. Blah, blah, blah. Alice breaks it up because it turns out Hal is not the father.
Which makes the fact that Hal tried to force Alice to get an abortion so much worse.
Do we have... No. Now, I would assume from past context of Hal's lack of connection to Chick that he knows or at least suspects that he's not the father, but we don't really get any insight into what Hal knows about this story.
No, but Hal being Hal, I have a feeling that if he thought that Chick was his, he'd be much more like, you are my child. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So Alice goes to Chick's defense and they hug, and over the shoulder of Alice, Chick gives Betty a very creepy smile because Alice is like, no matter what, you're still my child. So this is your home, Chick.
Yeah. Speaking of Hal, though, he's interviewing Hermione about why she wants to be mayor. Veronica and Kevin are also there for some reason. Hermione says that she wants to revitalize the town and the prison will do that. And while losing the Southside High was a difficult thing to do, building the prison will be really good for the town and it'll bring in a lot more revenue, which then boost education funding in the town. So that's exciting. We do get a hint that there's a student body president election happening as well. And Hal asks Veronica if she's going to run. She says maybe. She doesn't know. Then special guest star Andy Cohen appears.
It's so funny for all the obvious reasons, but also because he comes up in the first 90 seconds of this episode and is in it for 60 seconds, and then Andy Cohen is gone, never to be seen again.
I want to know if he knew what show he was in. The way he was talking was just what?
He was like, Hermione is a great businesswoman and will be a great mayor, and she's a fighter.
Yeah.
Get Andy Cohen to do this.
Who is blackmailing Andy Cohen?
Can I say the scene definitely made it seem like he was on a green screen. I'm not sure that came on the lot. Because they film in the middle of nowhere Canada, right?
Yeah, I think they do.
We know very little about Riverdale production, which we should look more into. Because
I feel like they definitely film in British Columbia, though. Like, those are the vibes.
Yes, it's in the middle of nowhere. So I don't know if Andy Cohen actually came out for that. But Kevin is very excited to meet Andy Cohen. And Hermione's like, any goodwill we can get will go a long way. And so that they're happy that Andy Cohen is endorsing Hermione.
Can you imagine in your like tiny small town with a population of like 20,000, suddenly Andy Cohen is endorsing mayoral candidates?
I must say, like, not to be too much of a like political scientist about this, but I think the people that already admire the lodges, like, that would be the only people that Andy Cohen would appeal to. I don't think the people that are like the lodges are outsiders and don't know how to take care of Riverdale are going to be swayed that they like flew in Andy Cohen to endorse Hermione.
That's true. That is so true. they're banking on them all being fans of Andy Cohen and Anderson Cooper getting drunk on New Year's Eve.
Honestly, that's the only reason I would vote for an Andy Cohen endorsed candidate.
Yeah. His rant against, was it de Blasio? That 1 year was so funny.
Gosh. Yes, they're iconic. And yeah, so anyway, the end of that scene is that Hermione wants Veronica to keep her head down, to try to stay out of trouble during the election time.
Yeah. Veronica's wearing a like white blouse with a giant ass black bow tie. Like, it's so big. And I just needed that to be commented upon.
She's going for something.
She was going for something. Anyways, then Fred reads the article based off of this interaction the next day, and he looks upset. Archie goes and talks to him and is like, listen, Dad, the lodges have thought about this. I was skeptical too, but like, they make a good point. And Fred is just not having it. He's not supporting the plan. And he says that he wants to pull out of Sodale and he doesn't want to work at the lodges anymore. And so Archie's like, wait, they're letting you do that?
Name one good thing. Wait, can I just also, this made me realize, or I guess it's more explicitly mentioned later in the episode, but this reminded me that the lodges did not pay Fred's medical bills. They sold it for 20% of the company. Which that was the only good deal.
But if I remember correctly, it's because Fred wouldn't let them pay for it. So they were like, fine, we'll do this instead.
Yes, but still, this was the only good thing they could think that Hiram has ever done. And it's not even like just a good deed done out of nothing. They got something in exchange for it. And either way, they were doing that good deed to maintain control over Fred. So, you know, even the explicit gift would still be to keep Fred in their pocket. They didn't even do it.
Veronica did.
And they didn't want to do it.
Veronica stole their credit card and was like, I'm doing this.
Anyway, if you haven't noticed, the lodges might not be great people.
Anyways, I was like, wow, aren't you king of understanding how business works? Because you were like, wait, they have to agree to let you do this.
King? Business major?
And Fred was just like, I don't care, I'm doing it. And they can not agree if they want to. And I was like, that's not how business works.
They'll figure it out. So then at school, we see Jughead is like kind of interrogating Veronica about if she knew about the plans for the prison. And Betty's, of course, like, no, Veronica had no idea, like just speaking for her. And it's like, okay, sure. Jughead is also on a hunger strike.
Jughead, I need everyone to know, opens this conversation by turning to Veronica at the lunch table and saying, I just loved your spin piece in the paper, Olivia Pope. Got him.
Sassy Jughead.
I was like, I don't think Jughead would watch Scandal. I'm sorry. He'd call it like too lowbrow or something. I don't know. He wouldn't understand its masterful storytelling.
So Jughead is on a hunger strike, protesting turning Southside High into the prison, and they're discussing this, and Ethel, underrated Jim, Ethel comes just up to their table at lunch, is holding a Pop's milkshake, and she says that Veronica has been found guilty of her crimes against Riverdale, and throws the milkshake in her face. Which just sets the tone for every action we're going to see this episode is just like, WTF.
There's so many more comments that I have upon this scene. First, this starts the tone of Jughead just being the most insufferable character of this episode. I hate him so much. B, Jughead says that he's going to go on the hunger strike and Archie literally laughs at him.
Get it? Because Jughead likes to eat.
He likes to eat, but it was just so out of pocket, yet so funny. Also, I need everyone to know that while she's making this dramatic statement and everyone is watching Veronica get milkshaked, Ethel is wearing the ugliest colored blouse or like sweater thing I've ever seen. It is mustard yellow.
It was bad. It was bad.
Anyways, then Veronica goes and cleans up in the bathroom because she, of course, has to after she was milkshaked. And she discusses what happened with Veronica, and Veronica says that she's impressed that Betty says that she's impressed that Veronica doesn't want to like retaliate more. And Veronica's just like, yeah, I kind of have to just take it. Like, it's just how it is.
Yeah. So then, speaking of continued chaotic actions, they leave the bathroom. And Reggie is hanging up posters that indicate he's running for student council president and says to Ethel, not to Ethel, says to Veronica that he heard she's got some dairy on her and he's got some nuts to top off that shake.
I heard you got a face full of dairy. I've got some nuts to top off that shake. If you want, consent is key. Hey.
Okay. A feminist twist.
It's so out of pocket and so funny.
And then they start getting it. And then, of course, Veronica's like, because that's her entire character. Yeah. To men, to saying things to her. And so then Reggie's retort is that he's like, what are the odds that your dad is the first inmate in that prison he's building? Which, like, since when do Reggie and Veronica have beef? Like, that seemed kind of out of pocket. Like, he seemed like he would make a sexual remark and Veronica would get mad about that. Why is he suddenly going for the kill?
I guess because she said no to his sexual remark. I don't know. Anyways, Veronica then like blacks out in rage and punches him in the face.
Just extreme course of action you can take. Veronica's like, that's what I'm doing. They told me to lay low 2 hours ago and now I just punched Reggie in the face.
She wasn't thinking. She was in a like rage blackout. Did you not hear the sound went away? You could see Reggie screaming, but there was no sound.
No, then it's totally okay to punch him.
Thornhill has a red light outside. That's what I wrote in my notes.
Duh, because she owns the color red.
It's a brothel.
Two different, I think, equally valid interpretations.
Wakes up in the middle of the night. Carol wakes up in the middle of the night because she hears her drawer knob like jangling, and she's like, "Who's there?" And it stops. So then she goes and puts a chair under the door. She's not safe in her own room, which is actually just really sad.
This is a very sad episode for Cheryl.
It's a terrible plot line. Like, it's, like, so sad. And everything else is so chaotic.
So the next morning, she tells her mom that like someone tried to break into her room in the middle of the night. And Penelope, of course, says that she's simply imagining things. And then Claudius is like, Nana Rose, would you like some more of Penelope's tea? Which, like, I'm sorry, I instantly knew what was happening here.
No, because he was like, it's a special blend. And I'm like, they're poisoning Nana Rose. That's what's happening.
Yeah, not really subtle, Riverdale.
No. Anyways, Veronica's also having breakfast and talking to her parents. And they are mad about her punching Reggie in the face. And are like, we told you to lay low. What the fuck? And at one point they said, we tell you what to do. So they're reasserting their dominance, and they reiterate that she just needs to lay low at school.
Yeah, Veronica wants them to give Ethel's dad a job at the prison because she says it was all Ethel's fault. And I'm like, was it all Ethel's fault? No, you didn't even attack Ethel. You punched Reggie.
Yeah, I don't know. There's a lot happening there. Anyways, then the next scene, Veronica announces in the student lounge to her friends that she's running for student president against Reggie the misogynist Mantle. So she's the women's rights candidate, I guess.
Look, we'll talk about it later. Jughead's like, wow, so your parents can take over Riverdale and you can take over Riverdale High. And she tells him that her parents actually think she should avoid the spotlight and lay low, but she's doing this in spite of them. And then as the Thelma to my Louise, Betty, will you be my vice president? Which, gay.
Yeah, pretty good. Next, Tony's trying out for the River Vixens and she looks hot. I wrote that in my notes. Cheryl is pleased with it, obviously. Then she says, well, I don't think there's any way you amateurs are going to top that. So practice is over, Vixens. Inner Circle Vixens, hang back. You know who you are.
Cheryl, even in times of great despair, she manages to be like this.
My favorite fact is that after she says this, there's a bunch of girls who just walk away instantly. They're like, yeah, I'm not in that. I'm not part of that. That's not me.
They know. She was right. They knew who they were.
But the inner circle is actually just every River Vixen who's a named character.
Yes. And Cheryl is inviting them all to a slumber party.
Yeah, to celebrate Tony.
Duh. Then we see a quick scene of Fred is telling Hermione that he wants out of their deal, and she's basically like, okay, well, we're gonna have to get lawyers involved, so yeah. Probably not great for Fred.
No. Hiram then talks to Archie about Jughead's hunger strike, and Archie is just like, yeah, Jughead just loves a political crusade, don't know what to tell you. And Hiram is like, Jughead is delusional, we live in the real world and I need you to tell him that, so go tell him we're knocking down this school at the end of the week. And he sends him off to do that.
He says he thinks he'll go off better coming from a friend, which, once again, why do we care that much about what Jughead is doing? Like, he manages to actually have a somewhat effective idea this episode, but, like, why is he so concerned about this hunger strike? Jughead's one dude doing this, so I don't really get Hiram's fear.
How do other people know he's on a hunger strike? Like, how... I'm confused about the hunger strike. Why was that his first form of protest in this moment?
And, like, do people really care if one person is doing a hunger strike?
Like, the ways in which I've known hunger strikes to be, like, effective. The thing that first pops into my mind is, like, prisoners are, like, protesting for like their rights as prisoners.
Yes.
Like, because the guards are legally like responsible for them. Yes. And their
like
safety.
Apropos of this episode, women suffrage protesters doing hunger strikes when they were in prison. Yeah,
like in prison. Not just a random high school.
If you're just some kid that refuses to eat food, you're basically just anorexic. Like,
it just reminded me, there was my freshman year of college, there was a guy who went on a hunger strike on campus because our school was like, because of like the state laws at the time, we were required to use furniture made by this company that used prison labor to build the furniture. And so there was some guy who went on a hunger strike to like protest that. And he just sat outside our student center for like a week and didn't eat food.
And I'm sure that worked.
It didn't. And there was so much discourse about the hunger strike. Like people who were like, this is like, people who are anti using the furniture were like, this is so stupid. Why are you doing this?
So yeah, that's Jughead's current plan. Archie then tells him that they are going to demolition of Southside High is the title of the article. Yeah. And Jughead is like, I don't know what you're doing here, bro. You're turning against me. You're turning against your dad. And is basically just like, okay, Archie has officially chosen the dark side.
Yeah. Jughead also, Archie at one point is like, dude, why do you care this much about that school? You went there for 4 days.
Which ate him up a little bit.
Which, yeah, he kind of ate there.
Then we see a great slumber party scene of the girls in a train brushing each other's hair. I did like that Tony was in the front and didn't have to brush anyone else's hair. I'm like, Cheryl definitely like assigned their order.
Oh, yeah, she did. It was giving the New Rules music video to me. Like, there's a scene where they do that in that. Also, Die Young by Sylvan Esso is playing over this, which I only comment upon because I love Sylvan Esso and they're not discussed enough in popular culture.
There you go. Cultural impact. Cheryl says that the reason for the slumber party is not just for funsies. It's because she's scared to be in her own home and wanted some other people over because there's a stranger in her house. And Betty instantly has to make everything about her as well. It's like, I'm also scared because there's a stranger in my house.
I thought it was less Betty making it about herself, which like obviously she kind of was, and more trying to be like, no, Cheryl, I understand you. I get it. We're going through similar issues. Like, we can empathize and relate, especially because people were kind of being like, Cheryl, you seem a little cray-cray.
Yes. But it's also like, Betty, you have so many people helping you and coming to your defense. And Cheryl's like legitimately scared her uncle's going to murder her. And then we see.
Another important thing to know in this conversation, Cheryl calls Tony TT for the first time.
Wow. This episode is so iconic. The one thing I will say, love Cheryl and Tony together, like obviously love at the from this point forward, Cheryl's entire character is Tony, and like there's literally nothing else other than Tony, which actually Tony gets more stuff outside of Cheryl than Cheryl gets outside of Tony pretty much from this point forward. So yeah, but I mean, I feel like it's, I mean, pros and cons, but I just think like that's it's pretty true. Speaking of, Cheryl wants to fuck at the sleepover because all the other girls are laying on the floor and she's in bed with Tony and they're just like giving each other's eyes. And she's like, I didn't actually want to invite everyone. I just want to invite you, but my mother would never let me just invite you for a sleepover. Reminding us that Penelope is homophobic, because that definitely becomes important later this episode. And they hear a loud crash and thud, and it turns out that Nana Rose, quote unquote, fell down the stairs.
Yeah. And they do like a really creepy photo, like close up of her, like just lying on the ground. But we quickly find out that she did not die because the ambulance comes and they're like, she should have died, but she didn't. That's wild. And Cheryl notices that Claudius is wearing Clifford's PJs during this all.
And Cheryl thinks that she is next.
Yeah.
Dot, dot, dot. Then we see Molly Ringwald, who does have a name. Her name is Mary, if you care, but I think we mostly refer to her as Molly Ringwald, so get with it. She's here to help Fred with some of the contract stuff, because if you remember, she's a lawyer. And then they're kind of discussing the situation with Archie, and Archie truly, or I don't know, truly believes, but says that Hiram will keep his word to Fred, and they're like, okay. And then Archie gets really snippy with his mother.
Yeah. Anyways, but Archie has lunch plans with Molly or Mary.
This is impossible.
Why'd they name her Mary? Archie has lunch plans with Mary, even though he's going to school, which is like, okay, I didn't know you could do that. Then at school, Veronica is running a cupcake and kiss booth, which I'm not entirely certain how that works, but it's Magnolia cupcakes, and she can give them locally sourced kisses, she says. Then Ethel shows up.
Wait, pause. We need to discuss this. I feel like, girl, choose one or the other. You don't need to be given out both. You flew in Magnolia cupcakes. I feel like that'd be enough for the people of Riverdale. Like, and also, the first episode of Degrassi Junior High, like the original one from the 80s, the first episode is also a girl running for student council president because of sexism. Because, like, the principal on the speaker is like, guys, get ready for, like, show your democracy and run for president. And Stephanie K is like, guys. So that's why she decides to run for student council president. And what does she do? Give out kisses for votes. And then she loses her best friend because of it. And I'm like, they stole this episode's plot from Degrassi Junior High, because that's literally what happens. That's Veronica's plotline this episode.
Yeah.
Agree. We all agree to this.
As someone who's definitely totally seen Degrassi. Listen, I want to watch it, but it's so long.
But you need to just disappear into it for a couple months.
I would, but I have a job and it's really annoying.
Okay.
Anyways, then Ethel shows up and like sees the stand and just decides to like turn away. But Veronica runs up to her and is like, no, Ethel, I want to talk to you. And that's when we get the iconic line. Sexualizing the election, Veronica. Well, it might get you the boys, but you can forget about the girls.
And can I also just say, in this episode, Stephanie K's best friend is like, you might get all the boys' votes, but the girls aren't going to vote for you. And she's like, okay, if the girls split between the other candidates, it doesn't matter. I'll still have all the boys and win. That's Veronica's plan.
That is Veronica's plan. They did steal this from Degrassi. I'm on your side now.
Now that I'm thinking that Veronica just has seen this episode of Degrassi and was like, that's a solid plan. I'm going to do that.
It's a solid plan.
And Veronica tries to get in Ethel's good graces by saying that her dad can expect a job at the factory. And Ethel seems not too impressed, and they walk away.
Nope. Then Jughead leads a meeting with the Serpents to complain about Hiram, and Tony's like, my dude, I don't care.
With every point he makes, Tony comes in and is like, but also, do we really care?
No, really. He's like, they're gonna tear down Southside High. And she's like, okay, we stopped going there months ago.
Yeah.
And then Jughead says that essentially is like, Tony's defense, he's using a slippery slope fallacy. He says that this is just to be like, it's a slippery slope. Once they tear this down, next it's gonna be the white worm and then all of the South Side. And it's like, okay.
And he also compares their current struggle to the struggle of the Utena tribe, that they, like, their land was taken and now our land is being taken. And I'm like, whoa, check it. No.
No, I know. He was like, they fought for their land. Now they're trying to tear down the high school. And I'm like, what the fuck?
Convinces everyone.
Not Tony. She's not to be seen at this protest.
Oh, true. She's too busy.
He convinces the boys, but Tony's just like, I don't... Okay.
If we're being completely honest, I think Tony pre-Cheryl would be like, yeah, sure, I'll go to this. But now she's like, I don't give a shit.
I think she would have gone out of pure boredom and to see Jughead get punched in the face. Whereas now she's just like, I have other things to do.
No. So then we see Molly Ringwald and Archie out to lunch, and she thinks that Archie is being led astray by Veronica, and she's basically just like saying what Fred has told him like every episode, like, be careful, because, you know, there's things that like the lodges have their appeal, but also be careful.
But yeah, Archie says he's not being led astray. Then Betty gets home, and who's in the kitchen? Chick and Kevin. Chaos. This episode is pure chaos. Chick apparently invited Kevin over because they kept chatting online after the whole catfishing thing ended. And Kevin ratted Betty out on catfishing him. And
so he sold his alleged best friend out for some twink he met online. That's like also an indescript age. Like, isn't he way too old for Kevin? Like, I'm not really sure how old he's supposed to be, but
I would think he's supposed to be, I don't, it's hard to tell because I think the actor is the same age. He's like actually playing his age.
Yes, but if like gave up Chick during teen pregnancy, so yeah, Alex in high school, we have to assume she was at least like 6 years out of, probably at least 6 years later before she had Betty, because she also had to have Polly in between, and they're the same age. So if Kevin's like 16, we say Chick is at least 22. No, no. I say no on this relationship.
Yeah, I also say no on the relationship, but you know, it is what it is. Anyways, then Betty's like, Kevin, you need to leave. And Kevin's like, what? And she's like, get the fuck out of my house.
She's also just such a perfect demonstration of their relationship of Kevin is literally just standing there and Betty's like, get the fuck out. Like, whatever he's doing is just wrong. And this is also, I think, pretty much the start of Kevin just being the punching bag for like every bad thing that can happen. They just make happen to Kevin. They're like,
I don't think this is the start. That's always been happening.
It wasn't that bad in season one, because I will say, when I watched season one, I was shocked by how well they treated Kevin as a character.
That's true.
But I guess earlier this season it was pretty rough, especially between Betty and Kevin. So like,
I was like, the whole cruising thing happened this season.
Feels like a lifetime ago.
We've aged so much in such a short time.
Poor Kevin. Anyway, Betty's like, don't mess with my friends. Once Kevin leaves, she's like, don't mess with my friends. Like, stay away from me. And Chick's like, well, you know, the darkness. And Betty says, you know nothing about my darkness, but you will.
Ooh.
Scary.
Scary. If I was Chick, I would not be sleeping in that house anymore. But you know, he's not me. So then River Vixen practice. Veronica talks to Josie. And Josie's like, why are you talking to me? We're not friends. We're not on speaking terms. Like, what is happening? And then Veronica's like, I wanted you to endorse me for student body president because Andy Cohen endorsed my mom. And so I think I need a celebrity endorsement. And Josie's like, oh, Andy Cohen.
Yeah, Veronica just straight up uses Andy Cohen and says that Josie can be a special guest on Watch What Happens Live. That much sway. But it's also just like classic Veronica, because like she's literally just, it's literally bribery, which mm-hmm. is literally what her parents did to Mary McCoy on several occasions. And it's just so like, you're not different from them, Veronica.
You're not. All I could think of during this was scene was there's an episode of The Other Two where Molly Shannon's character, who's like the mom, gets booked on Watch What Happens Live. And so she gets her son, who's like an aspiring actor, Gary, to be on the show, but the only like thing she can get him is being the sexy, like the shirtless bartender behind. And he keeps like trying to make it a moment, and it's so funny. Anyways, that's all I could think. I was like, who is Josie? Like, Josie can literally only be the bartender. She's not the famous enough to be anything else, but she also can't be the bartender because she's not a man.
Yeah. Wow. Another example of misogyny. That's why we need the song later. So then we see Mary and Fred are meeting with the lodges, and Mary says that this document could be seen as exploitative because Fred had no idea what he was signing, which I definitely believe. And yeah. During this, Hiram gets a call and immediately calls Archie. He's like, they're doing what? And then he calls Archie, and Archie is like at just leaving Riverdale High. It's confusing why he's out at night, but he's like, Hiram clearly tells him to go to Southside High. Why? Because Jughead and several of the guy teenage serpents are chaining themselves to Southside High. And Jughead tells Archie that they're not going anywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then Betty is showing her inner darkness, I guess. So she's sitting on the bed by Chick while he's sleeping, and she's like flicking a lighter on and off until he wakes up.
This and then, is so, you know what I thought of?
What?
Remember when Taylor announced Midnight?
Yes.
And made that post of like, my deepest, darkest demons haunt me, and these are the midnights of my life, whatever. And like the whatever cover is her holding a lighter. I was like, wow, this is so, Betty was probably so hyped for Midnights, and then it turned out to be nothing like this.
I was like, you mean when Taylor lied to all of us?
Yes.
Love her, but she's a liar, and I think we all know that. Anyways, then he wakes up, and Betty's like, you're not the only one who can scare people by being crazy. And then she says, I'm gonna bring you down because I catch bad men. I caught Clifford Blossom, I caught the Sugar Man, I caught the Black Hood, and you know what they all have in common? They're dead.
The fuck does the Sugar Man make this list? Like, this
no, is our she said it, and I went, villain. Oh yeah, you existed.
Who's literally the season one villain, the season two villain, and they're like, remember Sugar Man who was in that one episode? Like, why not just add more people to the list? Like, she's, who else has she caught? She caught that Sheriff Keller was having an affair. Like, she caught.
Yeah, but he's not dead. I'm trying to think of other people who have died. She caught Miss Grundy. Except she didn't. But she could have.
She kind of did. Yeah.
I think she was just using the ones that she could to be like, they died. Let alone, like, she had nothing to do with any of their deaths. Like, yeah. Clifford Blossom killed himself. The Sugar Man was murdered by the Black Hood. And the Black Hood was killed by Sheriff Keller. So, like, Betty.
Yeah. You actually haven't killed anyone yet. Betty, step up.
All you've done is hit a body.
Then we see Betty basically finds out that they've been protesting at Southside High and shows up the next morning. And she's like, what if you get arrested? And Jughead is basically fine if they get arrested because he's like, no matter what, it's going to look like Hiram like manhandling some kids.
Which, okay, but I don't know. Like, it'd be pretty easy to spin this off as like unruly kids.
And, like, again, not a political marketing expert, but maybe you lose the Southside jacket.
Yeah.
If that's what you're going for. Like, I get you want the solidarity and to show, like, why you're doing this. But it's like, if you want to look like innocent kids, I feel like people will be more sympathetic if you are just, like, dressed, I don't know, as teenage kids.
But my other thing is also, like, one episode ago, he was freaking out about how he bought the Rivendell Register and therefore can, like, control the narrative. So, like, he could just make whatever narrative he wanted out of you getting arrested.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
Not a flawless plan.
Not a flawless plan. But somehow, then, we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, then at school, we see they're like on some stage somehow, and Josie is endorsing. Oh, yeah. Josie is endorsing Betty and Veronica for president and vice president. And she wants to remind everyone, especially the women, to vote this election. And then they sing a song about women's suffrage for some fucking reason.
Then
Ethel Gain? I don't think so.
I don't know what's happening. I don't know what's happening. Then Ethel came in the room. She walks in. And she starts passing out flyers and very Cruel Intentions-esque. They say that Veronica is a liar and that she knew about the prison plan the whole time. And it was like, they had to be copying the end of Cruel Intentions, but like, I just didn't understand why.
I don't understand most of this episode.
It's like, it's not the ending. Veronica's not like, I mean, she's kind of getting a comeuppance, but like, not really.
It's confusing, but Ethel, this is like her way of, I don't know, spreading the word about Veronica, and Veronica, like, sees that she's handing these out, stops their performance, which, like, queen, you're not a very good performer if you stop because something's going on in the audience, but she's like, where did you get this information?
Again, Veronica, why weren't you like, this isn't true, what are you talking about? I didn't know anything. Why? Just lie. It's your word against this girl who hates you and publicly like threw a milkshake on you yesterday. Like, it's so easy to be like, it's a smear campaign.
That's what I'm saying. Like, just lie. But she's like, no, where'd you get this info? And then Betty's very mad because just like yesterday, Betty was like, of course Veronica didn't know about the prison and defended her. So she's kind of mad about that. and storms off, and Kevin is filming all of this, and he's like, this is insane.
I also wrote that down. Then we get immediately find out who gave Ethel the information, and it was Josie, because Josie's still mad.
Which, duh. Like,
but I guess she's not going on an Andy Cohen anytime soon now.
Well, no, she still is, because Veronica has no idea. That's why she gave the information to Ethel instead of, like, not endorsing them. She still endorsed them and just slyly gave information to Ethel to still, like, get the same effect.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know.
She's smart. Yeah. She has the political knowledge that the lodges are clearly lacking.
True, true. Veronica talks to Betty in the bathroom again, and Betty says she feels betrayed and is mad. And Veronica's like, listen, I didn't have a choice. Like, my parents told me what to do. I couldn't say no. They're my parents. Like, I had to do it. I was honestly just trying to work on the inside to keep them as honest as possible. And Betty's just like, I don't think I can trust you anymore. And so I can't run for vice president with you.
Veronica is wearing a pretty slay outfit, like this deep purple skirt, a black kind of sweater top, pearls, a black plastic belt that has like the little plastic bow. It's kind of a slay. Then the next scene we see, it just really grinded my gears. We see like Hermione telling Veronica that they told her to lay low, and now everyone is like turning against her, and Veronica starts crying because she's like, every day I have to face what we've done. Which, like, that's why you don't do bad things. She says that they are fighting a holy war and that she needed a shield. That's why she wanted to be president.
She was like, I needed my peers to not hate me, so I ran for elected office.
Yeah.
I was like, Veronica, I don't understand that thought process. Because, like,
this is also not a holy war. I don't think that needs to be said, but, like, does Veronica even believe that this is a holy war? Like, we don't get enough of an explanation on why Veronica is, like, so with her family on this.
We really don't. I will say, I think the one, like, useful bit of information from this is just that Veronica has to deal with the consequences of their family's choices in a way that her parents don't, because of the, like, she's at the school with the people who are, like, being affected. And they can kind of stay above it all while Veronica actually has to deal with it. That was what I took away from it. But yeah, you're right. Veronica's just being weird.
Yeah. The next scene we see at the Cooper house, Chick ratted on Betty. So Alice is like, why are you breaking into your brother's room in the middle of the night and scaring him? What the fuck? And she's like, also... Which, again, just complete out-of-pocket action, has the famous Polly wig. And she's like, and why do you have this?
Betty, which, why was it that suspicious to her that her daughter has a wig? Like, there are normal reasons to have a wig. Maybe it's like a Halloween costume. Like,
yes, but again, she could have just said no, right? Like, this is the Veronica move. Just deny it and be like, oh yeah, I have it for a Halloween costume. Or like, no, Veronica gave me that because, like, she said I would look good as a brunette and we were trying it. Like, I feel like you can, like, come
there's
up with
so many explanations for why she could have this wig, which is why I'm confused as to A, why Alice is so suspicious of the wig, and B, why when Chick says she wears it when she has sex with Jughead, she isn't just like, that's not true.
Literally, how do you know that? And Chick literally is like, it was a guess, which is actually pretty funny. That was a good Chick moment.
It was a good Chick moment. That, like, trope in TV shows is always so funny to me. Of the, like, when people are like, so why are you going off to do this? And they're like, how do you know? And it's like, you just told me. It's like, no.
Has anyone ever done that?
Like, has that ever worked?
So then Alice is like, what? Like, are you having sex with Jughead? And Betty's like, yeah, we are. Which again, why confirm this? Like, I just don't, I don't understand the teenagers on this show. And then Alice storms out.
Maybe it's straight people things.
I don't think straight people tell their parents that they're having sex, do they?
I don't know, but I feel like they'd be more open to it. I don't know.
I love that we have no knowledge. We're like, is that part of...
Is that straight culture? Is that what it is? Practice?
I'm not familiar. If you're straight, let us know.
Let us know.
Then we see... like kind of, I guess, like in the middle of the night or late at night, Jughead is the only one left, and it's like really, it looks like it's like cold and rainy, and FP is there and gives him a bunch of Pops hamburgers, and he says that he got a call from Hiram, and Hiram is offering them a penthouse in the new like housing that they'll be constructing as part of SoDale, and FP says that that could, the family could all be together if they had that much room, so they could get Jelly Bean and Jughead's mom back.
Yeah, but Jughead is still mad and is like, a penthouse with a view of what, a prison? And so he's still not having it. And he asks FP what he did, and FP says he just hung up on Hiram. He didn't say anything, gang. So,
FP has been slaying. Like the FP's... past episodes, I feel like there's been an FP slay in every single one. FP, see you in the fun stages.
I would also like to note that apparently while he was chained to the building, Jughead was still doing his hunger strike.
Yeah, like pick a struggle.
Pick a struggle, my dude. Because then when FP shows up with the burgers, he's like, it's just us. You can eat them. I won't tell anyone. Which, unethical, but...
kind of against the concept of a hunger strike, but okay.
Because FP was like, yeah, no one cares. Just eat the fucking burger.
Then at the Andrews house, we see Mary says that she like wanted to see Jughead while she's in town, and Archie's like, Jughead's gone crazy, and he's like, he's still protesting at that school. Why? Because everyone is afraid of having a vision for the future. That's why they're all scared of Hiram. And Archie's like going off saying like incoherent stuff, like there's no real argument. He's just like, he has the future and everyone just wants to say no to the future, but they don't know the future. It's like, okay, you're not convincing anyone.
No. Mary gets mad though. She gets mad, and she goes off and says that he's being disrespectful to Fred. And that Fred broke rocks in high school when his dad got sick and pays for the food on his table, which, like, yeah, he's his dad. Like, that's kind of part of it.
Also, once again, why are you not paying child support?
Why are you not paying child support, Mary? This is the okay. This thing actually does rub me the wrong way. I always hate when parents are like, I pay for the food on your table. It's like, that's like what you're agreeing to when you have a child.
Yeah.
Is to like give you nutrition. Like the basic needs of life.
Mary is, she's not like fully, she is kind of still supportive of Archie and says that he can't disagree. Like he doesn't have to be on his dad's side, but he shouldn't disrespect him. But she also throws in several digs at Hiram and is like, let's set aside that Hiram is a crook and won't let your dad out of the contract. You can agree with him, but just don't disrespect your dad. But
yeah. And she ends it by being like, and here father does have a vision for the future. And I was like, Does he, like, has he said anything that's like not just keep doing what we're doing?
Yeah, use Canadian labor to
illegal Canadian labor. That's his vision for the future. So I wrote in my notes Mary Slade, but was also annoying.
I do like just bringing up that Hiram is a crook because, like, yeah, Hiram is a crook.
Watching this scene made me think about how this argument is just like the epitome of leftists fighting on Twitter. It's like Twitter political fights where you're like, now I agree with you, but you need to stop pissing me the fuck off because I'm about to stop agreeing with you because you're so annoying.
Yeah.
And that's how I feel here.
Then we see in Betty's room, Alice comes up to ask if they're being safe. And Alice is like, I know how alluring the Jones men can be. Which, like, Rose, like, she's trying to tell
her that basically. Unnecessary comment.
Unnecessary comment. Weird comparison. And she's like, what? Like, FP could be potentially Chick's dad. And Alice is like, no, he's not. Which is like, also, how would you know that? If you don't know who the dad is, like, I don't understand.
Well, it was implied that she knows who the dad is. She just, like, isn't on speaking terms with the dad anymore or something.
Yeah, I guess. And Alice says that Chick needs them. So even though she's like, yes, I know he's weird and damaged and really fucked up, but he needs us. So yeah, she's not giving it up. And she is slaying in this gray sweater that has like these embroidered flowers.
Yeah, that's slay. Then Cheryl is reading Cheryl is reading a book next to Nana Rose in the hospital. And then she goes to talk to the doctor, who explains that there was a paralytic toxin in her blood. They found, and they're monitoring her for another day, but she'll be fine to go home. They think it's coming from the like greenhouse, but they think she's just accidentally eating it herself. And then Cheryl tries to be like, no, actually, my mom's poisoning her. But before she can get it all out, Penelope shows up and drags Cheryl away.
Which, I mean, okay, this doctor probably just believes like Penelope and Claudius on this. But wouldn't he also say, okay, so maybe like throw that plant out because it's dangerous to have with like an elderly person who gets confused? I feel like that would be like what the doctor would say.
Yeah, just be like, throw away all of the toxic plants, please.
So then we see Betty wants a truce with Chick, and she's like, he's like, but you're trying to get rid of me. And she says if she wanted to get rid of him, she would just call the cops. And Chick pulls the old Uno reverse and is like, actually, I should call the cops on you, because what would they find if they like dug up the body? They would find your and Alice's DNA all over it and none of mine. And he's like, actually, Betty, I'm scared of you. Like, I can't sleep at night because I'm scared of you. And just like, honestly, if I was Chick, I would be scared of Betty. Like, I see what he's doing here, but it's like, honestly, it's kind of fair.
I would be scared of Betty. I think Betty's kind of scary. Then Penelope is driving Cheryl somewhere, and Cheryl does accuse her of poisoning Nana Rose. But then Penelope says that Cheryl's gone mad and they had no choice, but to, take her. And we don't know where they're taking her, but they're taking her somewhere, implied to probably be like an institution of some kind.
Yeah.
We'll see.
But then.
Not great.
So Hiram's idea of getting rid of the protesters, because he says every like minute they're out there, it looks worse for him. And Archie thinks it would be worse for like the cops to come and take them away. And he's like, yes, I agree. That's why you and the wrestling team are going to go like take them away from the school, which I just like, I don't understand what would like the narrative that he would spin this as. Like, he would say these other high schoolers care so much that they're protesting a complete school that they're completely unrelated to, that they came and removed the protesters because they're that against protesting. Like,
I guess the argument would be that these high schoolers are so pro the like Hiram future plan that they're removing the protest, like,
yeah, it's not
just like counter protest, my dude.
It's, yeah, I don't know. Anyway, Archie's like, no, like, I don't really want to do this because of Jughead and all of that. And Hiram's like, oh, what you promised me. So then he's like, yes, sir. Okay.
He says, yeah, I'll do it as long as you release Fred from his contract, though. So he uses it for leverage a little bit. Then there actually is a protest outside of Southside High now. So Jughead is working his magic somehow. Archie shows up with bolt cutters. And they just let him through, and FP like threatens to fight him, and Jughead's like, no, dad, they'll just take you away.
Yeah, if you start fighting a high schooler, I feel like that's not a good sign that you're in like the right. Like, it's just not a good look.
Like, you are a grown ass man. Anyways. Jughead says that people have noticed that what he's doing, and that there's a movement now, and that he's not going to fight Archie, but removing him isn't going to be the end of this. And then people start booing as Archie cuts the chains and walks the teen serpents away from the school.
Yeah, a bunch of people are filming, and it's like getting Jughead's message out there. And then Jughead and Archie have a very intense scene of staring at each other, which, we're finally getting some Georgie content.
We are. I just thought of something.
Yes.
Aren't they trespassing?
Yeah.
So, like, they are there illegally, and they definitely didn't get, like, protest permits.
No, they did. They say that earlier in the episode.
Oh, did they?
Yes, they have a protesting permit.
Oh, okay. Never mind.
Then after all of that, we see at Jughead's trailer, Betty is massaging his shoulders, and he's like, I don't know, like, did I even make a difference? And, Betty's like, no, you totally did, with zero evidence of that.
My thing is that after the immediate previous scene where there was a massive crowd supporting him, I was like, Jughead, why are you like this?
Oh, like, why was he like, did I even make a difference?
Yeah, like, did I even make a difference? There was only a massive crowd supporting me.
He has to be melancholy.
I'm like, can you just not accept a win? Just accept a win.
And he says that he doesn't want to lose Riverdale High if he's going to lose all of Riverdale. So he's going to run for class president and wants Betty to be his co-president, which I'm like, do you mean vice president, or does he want her to be like his co-president? And can you do that?
That's a good question. I thought she was VP, which I did write in my notes, always a VP, never a P.
It says co-president, but I mean, I don't really remember where this plot line goes, but I believe she does just run as vice president. So I don't know. I don't know why they said co-president. Like, that's not what a vice president is.
I don't know, because they're weird. Also, I doubt that Jughead has taken an American government class. He's not. He's too busy reading books or something. I don't know.
And he's like, it might be awkward because of you and Veronica. And Betty says that there's no her and Veronica. And she agrees if he gives her the favor of letting her stay there because she wants to avoid Chick.
Yeah. Then Archie comes downstairs and Fred and Mary are eating breakfast and they reveal that Hiram let Fred out of the contract, which Fred credits to Mary, even though we all know it was really Archie. And then Mary is staying in Riverdale for a little bit to help out with some unfinished business, which is the fact that Fred is running for mayor.
Woo!
Wild.
Wild. Then we see Tony goes to Thornhill and asks where Cheryl is, and Penelope says, oh, she's not here, she's at a boarding school in Switzerland,
an all-girls boarding school,
which I'm like, oh, that was nice of them. Like,
Penelope said she can be a lesbian in Switzerland, just not here.
Yes, but no, not actually, because Cheryl is at the Sisters of Quiet Mercy, and the head sister that we've seen before, but I can't remember her name.
Sister Woodhouse.
Sister Woodhouse tells her that there's nothing to be afraid of, and Cheryl is very clearly terrified. But why is she here? Because they are going to rid her of her naughty demons and remove her, quote, unnatural thoughts. And she needs to rest up because tomorrow the conversion begins.
Wow. End of episode.
I know you were hoping for a conversion therapy plot line in this show.
I mean, I think everyone was begging for a conversion therapy plot line in the show.
I was like, Riverdale is perfectly balanced. It takes on all the issues so well. It needs to cover conversion therapy.
If there's one show that can do good in ending conversion therapy, it is Riverdale, and they need to get that message out there.
Yeah. So that's the end of the episode. What was your quote of the episode?
So my quote... simply because it's so iconic and I've seen screenshots of it everywhere, is she wears it when she has sex with Jughead.
Yeah, that's a good one. And Chick was just guessing. Mine also comes from the Chick Betty fights, but it's Betty saying, you know nothing about my darkness, but you will.
Chick and Betty are becoming a very fun combo, I'm not gonna lie. They're just
they're fun.
It's fun to watch them both just be criminally insane. Like
literally criminally insane. Like, he's like, I'm scared of you, and Betty's like, I'm scared of you. I'm like, I'm scared of both of you. I'm just scared. My outfit of the episode was actually, I'm gonna go with the Alice Slay of that gray sweater with the embroidered flowers. It looked very like it fit her character, something that she would actually wear, and it looked like very normal and just something nice you'd buy.
Nice. I'm gonna say Tony as a river vixen. It brought me joy.
That was a slay. I had in my notes that she was cunty.
You know, it's a big compliment because I wrote in my notes that she looks hot, which I don't say about women often because...
Oh, are you gay?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Speaking of, what do we want to do for Kinsey's Skill today?
So, should we do Andy Cohen?
Yes. Yes, we should. That's a stroke of genius. Andy Cohen. So we're doing Kinsey's Scale, which is the heterosexuality to homosexuality scale from 0 to 6. Today we are doing fictional character Andy Cohen. Note, not the real Andy Cohen. He can choose to identify however he chooses. Mm-hmm. But as a Riverdale character, do you have your number?
I do.
Ready?
Yeah.
1, 2, 3. We match yet again.
We both said six.
Can we just say second week in a row of perfect sixes?
I'm proud of us. I'm very proud of us.
So Andy Cohen is gay. Yeah. If you know that lore, watching him interact with Hermione, you pretty much get the picture. Kevin loves him. Probably gay. Yeah, connected with the Real Housewives, connected Hermione to the Real Housewives much later in the show.
We'll get there.
And yeah, I think that makes you a perfect six.
Yeah. It's the way he was like, she's a great businesswoman.
Gay.
It was just gay. No straight man would stand up and be like, she's a great businesswoman, and I always want to have her in my corner. Like, no. Straight men don't say that about women.
No.
They should, but they don't.
But they never would. So, nice. That's a wrap. Any other comments on this episode?
No. It's pure chaos, and that's what I enjoy in a Riverdale episode.
Yeah, it was really fun. So anyway, good night. Andy Cohen, come on the pod.
Andy Cohen, you're always welcome. Please be our guest. And if you ever need someone to go on Watch What Happens Live, we're free. We're available. Hit us up.
But we'll give our spot to Josie because we know she didn't get that.
Yeah, she ain't getting that one. You can... reach out to us. Let us know what your thoughts are on the episode. We'd love to hear from you. Hear what your favorite iconic fits of the episode or your favorite quotes of the episode are. You can reach out to us at cherylsbwords@gmail.com, or you can tweet at us at cherylsbitches, or find us on Instagram at cherylsbitches and TikTok at cherylsbitches as well. So that is cherylsbwords@gmail.com if you want to send us an email, and cherylsbitches on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Check us out, please.